Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to Luke's massive storytelling podcast thing. Whoa, yeah. Here we go. Check it out now. Enjoy.
Hello and welcome to Luke's massive storytelling podcast thing. My name is Luke and this is my thing. Just a quick shout out to massive listener William McGeegan, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, who emailed me a couple of weeks ago and kicked my ass verbally or on email and basically said, Luke, where are the podcasts? And here they are, they're happening. You're listening to a new one right now. So me and the Hawk and Cleaver boys are looking to crowdfund a comic book series next year. We decided that we have no idea how all that works, so we wanted to get in touch with a few comic book writers, and today we have one. He's an indie comic book writer, and he's a repeat Kickstarter offender, so hopefully he's going to offer some insight into the process, so let's see how that goes. Tom Ward is the independent comic book writer and co-creator of Merrick the Sensational Elephant Man, and see if I'm pronouncing this right, Treves? Or Treves, or Treves.
I think it's Treves.
Treves.
He was featured in an episode of Ripper Street as well. And I think they said Treves there, so we'll go with that.
Cool, go with Treves. Treves, A Restless Night, Victorian, Penny Dreadful, Pulp Horror one-shot comic. Tom resides in Liverpool in the UK, and going from his Twitter bio, he kind of enjoys comic books, punk rock, and Dark Souls. And he also curiously follows 666 people. Curious number there. Is that on purpose?
I just got up to 666, and then I really liked the bit in Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey where they go to hell, and they're like, "Sign of the devil, dude." Yeah. So I just thought I'd try and keep it as long as I could for like that, because it just makes me kind of laugh.
Yeah, cool. So I mean, who are you? What do you do? I mean, can you give us a bit of a background on how you got into comics? What started you in this whole thing?
Well, from when I was quite young, I used to read, the Beano, the Dandy, and, get copies of Asterix and Tintin from the library and stuff like that. So I've been reading comics quite a long time. And then, I kind of went to uni. I used to play in bands and stuff, and then my band broke up and I had nothing else to do with my spare time. So I thought, I like comics as well. I'll have a crack at that. And then kind of sat down and started working on Merrick.
So what kind of bands were you doing? Was it punk rock?
Yeah, I was in like some kind of skate punk bands, everything that was in Double Time. That was quite what I was into.
The Double Time with like the half time breakdowns, right?
For the bridge, you probably slow it down a bit, or the chorus.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. Did you like do any touring and stuff, or how far did you get with it?
We played just round kind of the Northwest. Like, opened up for some pretty cool bands. We opened up for Nose for a Name once, which is a personal favorite, so that was quite cool. Who else did we open up for? Ghost of a Thousand, I think they were on Epitaph Records, and just that kind of thing, really. Never really got big, but it's just fun, something to spend your time and your free energy on.
Yeah, so and then that just fizzled out, the people grow up, is what tends to happen with bands.
Just kind of everything just came to an end. You just kind of find an empty space with lots of, you want to do something, not just sit around and watch the telly. So you kind of get involved in new stuff. And as I was also into comic books, I thought, good place to go to. Let's do that.
Have you always thought about writing comics? Or have you ever drawn a comic book before?
Oh, I'm pretty bad at art, to be honest. I used to climb out the A-level art class window to play Mario Kart in the common room. And had a really embarrassing kind of display at the end of the year. So I think writing is probably going to stick with that.
Okay, cool. So embarrassing display, you don't mean like you climbed out and
Oh no, I had like half a board of pictures from my GCSEs.
I thought you meant you climbed out and your like trousers got stuck on the window.
No,
or something.
No, nothing like that. It was just a pure lack of work and a terrible work ethic on my part.
Yeah.
But yeah, and now I work hard and write stuff.
Yeah. So it's quite, I think a lot, because I was in bands and a lot of my friends who are like independent storytellers were in bands growing up. Some of them still are. I think there's something to say for that DIY attitude or that sort of creative nature. Yeah. A lot of them get into this later on.
I think it's kind of the mindset of people as well that you don't want to just, you know, go home, watch Coronation Street, go to bed, go to work. It's the kind of people who kind of like creating stuff or doing something a bit different or, you know, having a bit of energy they want to put into different kind of avenues.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is good.
So was Joseph Merrick the Elephant Man the first thing you started, or was there a few others before then, or what happened there?
It wasn't actually. I think it's about the third idea I came to. And the first two ideas are still good and I'm going to get to them eventually, but I think this was just the one that I thought people would kind of be able to connect to the best.
Yeah.
And seem the most likely to succeed. And kind of it got to the scripting stage, which was really easy.
So so the first two. So I'm just trying to picture you. So you finish it, like your bands, you get a call and say, we're not doing any gigs anymore. And then what do you do? Sit down and just open a Word document, or?
To be honest, it was sat in the office job, bored all day. And
okay,
you start
cool.
thinking about,
yeah.
you start thinking about stuff. And, I don't know, the Elephant Man one was, I was just kind of sat around thinking, you know, there's Batman, there's Spider-Man, there's Ant-Man, there's Hawkman. I was just thinking about different superhero comics. And then I was like, oh, the Elephant Man, that was like a real thing. Like, I wonder if that's been done. So I did a little Google. It hadn't been done. So I ended up just started kind of, you know, just kind of curiously reading through the subject, going on Wikipedia and got a couple of books. And it just kind of wrote itself, really. All you had to do was twist a couple of things. And it was basically, you know, there was like a superhero origin story. There's masks. There's like, you know, people are using aliases and things. There's like shifty societies, and it all just fell into place really easily.
Yeah. So the storyline, so it's a 4-issue storyline, right?
Like the first story arc was four issues is what we've done so far.
Okay.
The idea is to keep it going, and it'd be kind of, you know, there's definite like a beginning, middle and end in my head.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's broken down to different story arcs. So hopefully once this new one, this Treves spin-off's done, we're going to go back and do like the second Merrick story arc and hopefully keep it going until we get to the kind of, you know, the final resolution.
It's cool. I mean, I remember, so I stumbled upon your Elephant Man campaign, I think. Was it March last year you did it?
Yeah, I think it started like February, March, yeah.
Yeah. I remember stumbling upon that, and I think the idea, I think there's something about it, it resonates as a comic book, and it seemed fully realized already. Like, and also the art style, and it just looked to me like something that should be on the shelves already. I can't see why it hasn't been done before. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's why when I Googled it, that was what shocked me the most, because I was like, why hasn't this been done? And then you start thinking you're onto a good idea, because you're like, I'd read that, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it seems like something that should be done. So why isn't it done? All right, I'll do it. Like, it's one of those rare times. I mean, you probably get ideas and you think, oh, that's a good idea. And then you have a look and, you know, it's been done before. It's been done 100 times before. But this was like something that I thought was good and hadn't been done. So I was like, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah. Was there any sort of inspirations in terms of other comics or films or anything that went into it, or like the David Lynch film or anything like that?
I hadn't seen the David Lynch film actually. So that's something I watched. But it's generally like a mishmash of like, you know, kind of all the kind of pulpy, like one shot, like all the pulp stuff and the Penny Dreadfuls, and kind of, you know, there's folklore in there, and there's like a bit of H.P. Lovecraft style kind of horror of the time. Comic wise, I know Luke's a huge Mike Mignola fan, obviously.
Yeah.
He's well into his Hellboy and all that, which I hadn't read at the time. But I was always a big fan of, like, you know, Alan Moore and Frank Miller. And I really love Brian K. Vaughan as well.
Yeah.
I think probably quite a lot of, you know, Frank Miller kind of pulpy stuff has probably gone into there subconsciously on some level, like, you know, The Dark Knight and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So Luke Parker, the artist. So the overall look, obviously, is it's obviously he's had a big say in it. So I mean, how was the process in working with him? Did you know him before? Did you just rock up with a script idea and say, "Do you want to make this together?"
How did it was like a like an internet collaborator thing.
Yeah.
You know, I spent quite a long time trying to find, you know, an art team to put together. And I had one guy. I think he was from South Korea, I think, and he was on board. And then he got some video game kind of spec work, so he was like, "Oh, sorry, I'm gonna have to drop out."
Yeah.
And then it kind of went on the back burner a bit. I was like, "Oh, it's getting tough, this." And then I just saw Luke applying. He put a link to his portfolio on another ad that I saw on a website. I think zwell.org. There's like a comic book writers search. Comic book art, what artists kind of forum.
What is that site? Sorry, Zwell.
Zwell, Zwol.
Zwell. Okay.
Yeah. If you type in comic book writer seeking artist, it's like one of the first sites that comes up.
Cool.
In a kind of like weird Lonely Hearts kind of way. So I saw his portfolio and thought this would be spot on. Sent him an email, kind of little elevator pitch. Attached the scripts, you know, a bit of a synopsis. Kind of tried to sell myself as well.
Yeah.
And Luke was into it, so it was like, well, okay, let's put a comic book together.
So did Luke charge you for, like, yeah, you know, other
I'd scrape some money together to kind of fund the first issue.
Yeah.
Which is like, you know, it's not unreasonable. Like, so much time, effort goes into, you know, making a 22-page comic book.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Like, if I mean, there are people who team up and, you know, the artist does it, and, you know, they're going to split the back end and all that. But it's going to be, you know, after day jobs and afternoons, and, you know, bits here and bits there. So I was just like, let's just get this done.
Yeah.
Funded the first issue. I put it out online free, which meant I could send it off to review sites, and, you know, people could check it out, and launch Kickstarter at the same time. And hopefully I was working on the idea that people like the first issue and want to read more. And so they back the Kickstarter, and we get issue 2, 3, 4, and find out what happens next in the story.
So, the time split then, between how long it took you to write the first script to sort of how long it takes Luke to draw. Does he do the inking and coloring as well, or is that someone else?
He does all the art. Oh, yeah.
Wow,
he does,
okay,
all the art. He does. So his pencils, inks, then colors. And then another guy in Australia, Nick J. Shaw, who was a contact of Luke's, he does the lettering on the final end stage. But yeah, I think I took about a year to write the first four scripts. That was a lot of that was research as well.
Yeah.
Because it's all kind of, it's all historically accurate, you know, like the dates, the places, the people. It's only like there's a couple of twists, obviously, where, you know, it becomes fictional. But it is very much grounded in kind of fact, which takes longer, but kind of I think it's worth it.
It sounds like a really good idea to have that first issue, send it out to reviewers, and then have the Kickstarter to send people to that Kickstarter.
And you can use it to feed to your project, really.
Because I always wondered, because a lot of people who do campaigns say a lot of the traffic doesn't come from Kickstarter itself. You've sort of got a direct traffic there, so does that ring true to what you found?
I think so. I think the first Kickstarter we did was about half and half.
Oh, cool.
About half was people browsing, you know, came across it on like Kickstarter Discover, evidently saw it, but liked it, backed it. The second Kickstarter we're doing at the minute now, it's actually up to about 60% from Kickstarter, rather than direct links. But they have had us as, you know, we've been a featured project, and I think we've been on the front page. So we've got a lot of people from that. I think that does help. So I think, you know, you can't just kind of set your project up, kind of wash your hands of it and be like, oh yeah, money's going to come rolling in. This is going to be a sure thing. You have got to kind of, you know, promote yourself and push the project. But if it is good, I think people will find it as well at the same time, you know, and add to it.
Yeah, and the Elephant Man's got such a hook to it as well, like a story there, that I kind of can't help but imagine people will be sharing it anyway or passing it around.
Yeah, I think it helps. It people like stuff that's familiar to them, don't they?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's easier to sell something to someone who's kind of got an idea what the score is going to be, like to kind of be an unknown creative team and kind of trying to, you know, pitch a completely new unknown thing I think it's going to be like 10 times harder.
Yeah. So, if you don't mind me asking, how much did it put you out of pocket for that first issue?
Oh, that was about just over £1,000.
So it's an investment, right? So
yeah.
And did you make that back in the Kickstarter, or was that just to fund the creation of the next issues?
That was that wasn't kind of included in the goal of the Kickstarter.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I've been spending like, you know, £30 a month or whatever on, you know, studios, like, you know, a practice room and stuff for the band. So I had that kind of hobby money kind of, you know, left over. So I thought I'd put that into this. Yeah. We actually spent more on the after the first Kickstarter because we printed more books. So we printed like 500 copies of each issue, and we had about 200 backers. So about 200 went out to backers. So that left us like 300 copies of each book.
Yeah.
So then we've been going to comic conventions and we've got an online store. So we've we've continued to kind of move books.
Yeah.
Which is kind of taking the deficit down.
Sorry. Yeah. But so the conventions, how are you getting into those things? Is that sort of, do you have contacts there already, or do you just pay and turn up, or how does that work?
Yeah, it's just find a website of a local convention, contact them, see if they've got any tables, and, you know, it can vary wildly what a table will set you back. You know, I've done some that's like £5 for the day. And, you know, the MCMs and stuff can go right up to like £120 for a weekend. But obviously there's going to be more foot traffic and more people. But that's not to say the more you spend on a table, the better you're going to do. I've done some really small conventions. Like we did one in Lancaster in a library.
Yeah.
And that was like £5 and that was brilliant. Like sold loads of comics, had a great time, talked to loads of brilliant people. And then we've done some that are remain nameless, that were quite expensive and were an abysmal weekend. So this year I've been doing as many as possible. I've done easily over 12, maybe up to 15, 16.
So this is taking the place of your touring.
Like, pretty much, yeah. Luckily, I've got a friend who does a comic as well, Chris Welsh.
Yeah.
He does a comic called Wart. It's kind of Lovecraftian comedy horror.
Cool.
And, you know, we go to conventions, and we've got someone to hang out with and talk to. So I imagine if you're by yourself, it's quite lonely and a bit depressing. But if you're having a few laughs, it's quite a good time.
Yeah, yeah. So the campaign itself, like you beat your score. You beat your goal. So yeah. You asked for, was it 4.5K? And you made about 5K or around that. Is that right?
First one, yeah, we kind of just made over 5,000, which is good.
And how soon into the campaign did you get to the goal?
That was the last couple of days. It was getting a bit close to that. Yeah, I had a feeling that it would do it, but it didn't kind of hit the goal till about 4 days till the end.
Oh man!
this time we've hit the goal very early, like. I think we were over 50% funded in the first 24 hours or something. And we kind of hit the goal with over 2 weeks left to go for the Trees Kickstarter. Now we're on £4,200 and we asked for a £3,500 goal with 11 days left to go. So pretty good shape. And I think that reflects that we did the first one successfully and, you know, finished it and sent everything out and people liked it and it was high quality.
Yeah.
And you were happy to come back and back us again. So I think when you're like a Kickstarter creator, everything you do kind of, you know, you've got the potential to grow. So if you've got like a huge project you want to do, maybe hold off, you know, do a smaller one and, you know, show people that you are reliable and that you can finish what you started and, you know, come through on your promises.
Yeah. It sounds, I mean, I've seen a few comic book creators on Kickstarter. I think Fabian Rangel Jr.
Did a similar thing. Unknown, yeah.
Yeah, he seems to daisy chain them, or it seems that way anyway. So, the people who funded your first campaign, do you get them on a mailing list or something like that? Are they people who've come back and funded you again on this one?
A lot of people have come back. Yeah, you can send updates out, you know, even once a project's finished. So, you know, just I think like the first day I set the new Kickstarter up, I just set an update to the everyone who backed the first one and said, look, really hope you enjoyed the first comics. If you did, we're doing this new thing. If you'd like to check it out, maybe come and back us again. That'd be brilliant. So we have had quite a lot of returning people.
That's cool. So that's really organic then. So you could literally just, well, maybe not do this forever, but like you said, just grow it, sort of start small and maybe do a slightly bigger one next time and bigger on top of that.
I think there's a comic, it's called Boston Metaphysical Society, and I think they're up to like issue, you know, 5, 6, 7 or something like that, and they've just, you know, each time do a different single issue and keep it going, like you say, daisy chaining it. Fabian did like three trades with Doc Unknown and a spin-off as well.
Boss Snake.
He's been doing he's been offered all kinds of writing opportunities now. I think he's just had a story in a Dark Horse Presents annual, and he's
Image Comics run or something as well, isn't he? Or
it's a Black Mask one. It's a Space Riders, like a psychedelic kind of trippy space adventure.
That's cool. So I mean, how has the response been to I forgot how we're going to pronounce his name, Treves, on this run?
It was it's really good. Like the fact that it blew up so much in the first 24 hours was just kind of amazing. I was just sat there watching the counter go up, like didn't know where it was going to stop. We kind of balanced out now in the middle. It's kind of slowly kind of, you know, still trundling along, still building, which is good. We've got a convention on Sunday. We're doing Leicester Comic Con. So hopefully that'll be another like promotion opportunity. And then it actually finishes the Sunday after, which is the last day of the Lakes International Sequential Art Festival, which we'll be at for the weekend. So hopefully that'll be a good opportunity for the one last push and, you know, have a bit of a celebration at the end as well.
So in terms of the different tiers that people can support you, what sort of things are you offering? Sort of what prices?
This time around, we've got the new book, which is about, it's going to be about 40 pages, give or take. And you can get a digital copy of that for £2. You can get digital versions of all four copies of Merrick plus the new book for £6. And £7 will get you the new book delivered to your door with a digital copy as well. And we're also doing like a trade paperback collected volume of the first Merrick story arc as well. So for like £18, you can get that and the new book as well. So that'll be like two books with spines you can put on your bookshelf and it'll look quite nice.
Cool. And what's the most popular tier bin?
I think that one. Yeah. £18 for the two books. I think we've had 84 backers on that at the minute, which is quite a lot, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. So is that the highest tier?
No, the highest one is where stuff starts to get a bit silly. That's the you can get the original cover art for either the paperback or the new book, and that's £500. And you get another, you know, a bunch of other stuff with that as well. We did the cover for the first Merrick issue on the last Kickstarter, and we put it up as just kind of like an afterthought. We didn't think it'd go, and it got snapped up within 10 minutes of being there.
Wow,
which was pretty crazy. I can't remember how much it went for. It was a lot of money though, which was cool. Let's have a look. Yeah, the first cover we sold for £250. Yeah,
wow, spot on.
Yeah, and that went within 10 minutes, which was obviously a huge chunk towards getting the comic finished, and pretty awesome that someone thought, you know, the comic was worth it.
Yeah. That's cool. Nice. So, you made your target. So why carry on? Do you know what I mean? Like you've got the goal, or how does it work now with the stretch goals? Have you got sort of any extras planned or anything like that?
We've got a couple planned at the minute. Like the first one is just like some kind of desktop wallpapers that we thought would be hit. The second one's like a making of book. And we did this last time just straight off the bat, but it took me literally forever to do. I didn't realize how much work it'd be. So we've put it as a stretch goal this time.
Yeah.
And what that is, it's going to be like a huge PDF file. And it's going to go from basically every step you'll see through the creation process of this book. So you'll see the script for page one, and then you turn the page, the digital page, and then you'll see the pencil layouts for page one, and then the next page will be the finished pencils for page one, and then the inks for page one, and then the colors for page one, and then the letters for page one, and then another page at the end with notes about why we've done something or if there's anything of import or note. So if you're interested in making comics, that's a pretty, I imagine, quite helpful thing to have. A few people have mentioned that they really, really enjoyed the first one. So at 40 pages, it's going to come in at it's going to be like, is it 800 pages, maybe? I don't know.
It's hefty. It's a heavy PDF, as heavy as a PDF could probably be.
It's going to be a lot of megabytes, yeah.
Yeah. Did you tweet something about this the other day? I think I saw
possibly a
picture or something.
I've tweeted and I've done an image that breaks down so you can see, you know, all six pages, what they look like, so you can see how it grows. And I think that's probably really useful, mainly. Well, I'm sure writers are probably like seeing the scripts, but for artists to see how a script transfers to a finished page, I imagine it is probably quite useful.
Yeah. So like, you do need all these comic book conventions, and that's sort of like the ongoing sales process or marketing process even. Are you doing sort of any online ads or Facebook ads or anything like that?
No, it's all pretty DIY, to be honest.
Is that something you'd look at doing? Say again, sorry.
I don't think so.
No. Cool. Okay.
I don't think so. I think if I had cash to drop on ads, I'd rather drop it on some new
making
art or
stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, someone you can post about that way.
Yeah. And you're on Comixology, right? On the online marketplace.
Yeah. All four issues of America on Comixology. And we're also on another one called Comics Fix, which is like a bit of a Netflix for comics. I think it's like $10 a month and you can read a bunch of stuff. There's lots of kind of indie stuff and some Dynamite comics and, I think there's some Garth Ennis stuff and some other things on there.
So what was the process like in getting on Comixology?
It takes quite a long time.
Oh, no. What was the process look like?
It's, you know, just a standard kind of web form, fill in all your details, upload the files.
Incredibly unexciting. It is.
It's simple.
Yeah.
And I don't think you could mess it up as long as you're kind of, Your finished file is formatted the way they want it.
Yeah.
It's not a very sexy thing, and it takes a while.
Yeah.
And it'll take them a while to get back to you as well before it comes on.
They're owned by Amazon now, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
The process seems very different to the process of self-publishing an ebook, it's pretty much you upload the file, you set the price, it's very, very hands-on. I mean, how hands-on can you be with the pricing? Or if you can at all?
You have control of that, yeah. I think there's different options.
Right.
You know, there's like a drop-down box. I think the lowest you can go is 99 cents, which comes through as like 65p on the UK site. I'm not sure what the top end is, but yeah, you can choose. And you can write your own little, you know, your little blurb. And you can fill in who's on the creative team. And I think that links to like a database. So there's links on the right-hand side. So if you want to see anything else that Luke's done, you can click on Luke's name and it should bring through any comic that he's been involved in, and so on and so forth. But yeah, it's a bit of a nightmare when it comes to the kind of payment side of things. They want lots of kind of American tax forms come through and then they want them posted to them. And that's, yeah, a bit of a nightmare.
Is this like, I can't remember what it's called now, it's like a secret code like EN8 or some sort of...
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah. Someone like that.
If it's similar to Amazon, Amazon have like a built-in web form version of it now. I don't know if Comixology have that yet. I don't know. If they don't, they probably will do at some point because it used to be a paper process, but they've digitized it all now.
Yeah, it's 2015. It should really be dead easy.
Yeah.
We've had the internet for a while now.
Yeah, for a fair bit. Yeah, I quite like it as well. I hope it sticks around. I don't know.
It's useful.
Yeah. So what's the future of like Tom Ward look like? What are you going to be doing? Are you going to look to do more indie comics or are you going to be submitting to Image, you know, doing all that sort of thing? How does it look for you?
Probably just going to keep doing my own thing, to be honest. I'm quite impatient. So if I submit to like a publisher, I've got to wait for ages, or I could just put it on Kickstarter and see what happens straight away. So that seems, you know, more promising.
Yeah, it's exactly like me. So it's in like a book publishing, if you write a manuscript, you send it off to the agent or whatever, they'll get back to you within 6 to 18 months, which to me is ludicrous.
Yeah, I may as well just put it in the bin and forget about it. That's too long. Let's move fast. So I've got a new thing coming out. Well, we're going to launch it in November, hopefully at Thought Bubble weekend, called Doc Dino, about a dinosaur who's the world's greatest surgeon on paper. that I wrote that with a friend of mine, and we've got one page of art to come in for the pitch preview, and it's very silly.
Fun. When are you looking to that? November?
Yeah, hopefully the end of November.
Cool. So what is the turnaround time for someone like in Image Comics for a submission?
I think they say, it's six weeks. If you don't hear back from them, forget about it.
Even that, like the lack of courtesy to say, to just drop you a message and say, sorry, like, no.
Yeah, but can you imagine how much stuff they get through the door? It must be so much. So much must be quite bad.
And are they asking for physical prints or digital files?
I think they used to, but I think you can send digital files now to Image. I think you need eight pages of completed sequential work and a cover, a synopsis and a full script, I think is what they accept. Yeah. I may be wrong.
Okay, so you've got...
Dark Horse takes scripts, I think, and scripts and art. Oh,
okay, that's interesting. So, you've got Doc Dino coming out, and then what about next year, or maybe 2 years or 5 years? What are you going to do going forward?
Stressing me out, man. I'm going to do some more Merrick early next year for sure. And I want to do a mini series as well, which is one of those the first idea I had. But let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. These things take a lot of time, and hard work, so I don't really want to jinx myself.
So is this going to be as heavily researched and based in facts as the Elephant Man story?
It's going to be a bit freer, but I'm going to have to learn about boxing, which I currently know nothing about, so still quite a bit of research.
Are you going to get involved physically in the research?
No, I don't think so. I've been punched plenty of times and it wasn't great.
Oh no, okay, all right. Cool. So just a couple more questions, really. I've got here, so who is your storytelling idol and what work of theirs do you love? You mentioned Frank Miller earlier. I'm guessing either him or Alan Moore, maybe?
Oh, it's going to be Brian K. Vaughan, definitely.
Oh, cool. What series?
Oh, the obvious one is probably Why the Last Man.
So I wouldn't say really that's good. The obvious one anymore. I thought you were going to say Saga.
Saga would be the obvious one now, but keeping it old school.
Yeah.
Yeah, Why the Last Man or Ex Machina is really, really good. That kind of made me think about politics in a different way, which means it must be good if it has kind of long-lasting effects.
I haven't actually. I think I read the first arc, and then it's just something to do with me and politics. I get a bit blank.
it does sound like a terrible idea. I think I was the same at first, but the more you read, the kind of there's more twists and turns. It's really good. I'm a big fan of Runaways as well, which is kind of like the Goonies with superpowers that he did for Marvel.
Yeah.
And there's a book he did called The Escapists, which is about a group of kids kind of making their own comic. And it's like it spins off from a novel by Michael Chabon called The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay, which is a really, really good book. So I definitely recommend that one.
What about things that aren't comic book related? So like TV or film?
TV or film? I generally hate everything. I'm really excited about new Twin Peaks, but probably it will never live up to my excitement.
See, I'm not excited. I'm really worried, terrified.
Yeah, that's it. Like, I'm excited on one hand, but the more excited I get, the more I'm sure it'll be terrible.
Yeah. What did you think about season two generally?
I liked it. I kind of like the weird comedy storylines that got brought in for little to no reason. But it was definitely strange.
I think it would be better than season two. Some of the season two storylines, like the storyline, I can't remember his name now, I'm blanking, but the guy the Mr. Horn, who has like the little game pieces,
and he thinks he's General Lee.
Yeah, that bit was just really
it's brilliant. Oh, when Nadine gets super strength for no reason.
Yeah, and then right at the end, she remembers who she is. Or I haven't seen it in a long time, but I need to catch up on it. But
the main problem with it is like the final scene is like the best full stop, like in anything ever.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Continuing from that is like, oh, are you going to top that? Maybe not.
And Karl McLaughlin's a lot older and more sinister looking now.
Have you been watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. though? He's really good, isn't it?
I haven't been watching it, no.
He's kind of a psychopathic villain, which I hope is kind of practice for evil Cooper.
Oh, yeah. The last thing I saw him in was Desperate Housewives. And he's sort of psycho-ish in that, but he's also like a really nice guy. So... I'm sure it'd be good. Well, it's David Lynch, and he's directing the whole thing, right?
I'm not sure. I think it was cancelled, then it wasn't cancelled, and then he was doing it, and he wasn't doing it. But it might be okay. Maybe not.
Yeah. So you don't like any other TV or any other film?
I say that I'm just quite grumpy about stuff. I really liked Carnival. It was a great TV show that got cancelled. Kind of about traveling circus in the American Depression. That's worth checking out.
That's a common theme with your work, I think, as well. That sort of traveling.
Yeah, it's probably a bit of influence of that in Merrick, probably. I also quite like post-apocalyptic stuff. There was a TV show called Jericho that got cancelled. That had Skeet Ulrich in it. That was good. I'm trying to think what else. True Detective season 1. I was pretty bang into that. That was good.
Yeah.
Season 2, not so much.
I didn't bother. I just heard so many bad things about season 2. Just didn't bother with it.
Yeah, it's not great.
Yeah.
There was a whole conversation about e-cigarettes, which kind of killed it for me.
Cool. So last question I've got for you. If you were starting out all this again, like what would you do differently?
Oof. I considered whether I should have broke down the first 4 issues American did, single Kickstarters for each of them. And you know, maybe it would have built more and I'd have had, you know, more backers by the end of issue 4, and it had grown more, but then at the same time, you know, there's 3 extra chances for failure. So it's a tough call, really.
I don't know how you'd play it, because if you get to like episode 2 and you don't, I don't know if I'd risk it, but
exactly. I was mulling it over and I was half kicking myself, and I thought you should have put the first one on, kickstarted printing it, then kickstarted issue 2, then kickstarted issue 3, kickstarted issue 4, and like, you know, maybe you'd have had more backers and smaller goals, you'd have got more. And then I was just like, nah, I've got 4 comics, I'm super happy with it.
Yeah,
like pretty happy the way I did it. I think doing the first issue for free was definitely the right move to make, because I haven't published anything else or written anything else. I didn't want people to kind of just be swayed by, you know, cool artwork and then be disappointed by the final product. I wanted them to be able to read it and think, yeah, this whole package is great. I want to support this. And, you know, be happy with the fact they were doing it. So I'd almost be tempted to do that again with another series, like release the first issue completely for free.
Yeah. So, I don't know if you know much about like me or like my background, sort of filmmaking and writing books and stuff. But mm-hmm. me and a few other guys, basically we've started our own little digital publishing company called Hawk and Cleaver. And the idea is next year we want to do our first like comic book. We're all massive comic book fans. We just never did it. So, which is why we're sort of looking to guys like you who've done it successfully, and not just done it successfully, like made really cool, you know, comics that we really, really like. But so our biggest argument was, I said, you wouldn't agree with this at all now I've been speaking to you, but I said, why don't we, instead of just doing one comic book, launch it as a company and do 3 titles concurrently in one campaign, because then we'll get more, you know, exposure for it being a little bit different, a little bit bigger. But we've decided to just do one title. Is that sound more reasonable?
Like 3 unrelated titles?
Well, I mean, so I figured maybe they could be related or have some crossover elements, but they would be free. Like, it'd be like starting Image Comics or something like that. Do you know what I mean? But just do the first four issues for each title.
I think it would be that could be done quite cool if there was like, you know, someone linking them all together. But if you're doing like three completely independent things, I'd probably go for three separate ones, and then your goal's going to be lower. Do you know what I mean? Like
that was our big concern, because that's asked for a lot of money, and I don't.
I think when you're doing like your first Kickstarter, I think you kind of got to, if you look at the ones, it might have changed since I was doing my research, but kind of stuff around, you know, £5,000, $8,000 was kind of the sweet spot that you kind of expect to get to realistically.
Yeah.
And like comic books on Kickstarter seem to have like a cap of around 600 backers. Like, you know, obviously there's exceptions to break this rule, but you know, people don't seem to get much higher than 600. So obviously your goal kind of needs to be divisible by how many backers you think you're going to get, which is like starting out probably 100, 200. So that's how I kind of worked out. I took my goal.
Yeah.
Divided it by like 150 backers, worked out what that was. If it was like an insane amount of money, you still have to rework it, because that's what you need, like your average pledge to be.
Yeah, yeah. It's quite clever.
It's all numbers really. And then once you work out what your average pledge needs to be, then you need to make sure you've got a reward level that fits that amount and is worth it, if you get what I mean. So like if you need 150 people to pledge an average of £20 each, you've got to give them someone worth £20 to kind of back. And then it should all fall into place, but you know.
Hopefully. there's always that worry. But I think what we'll do, because it sounds like people are not just getting into the artists or the writers, but the intellectual property, like the brand of the series itself. So I think because you've done this Joseph Merrick, the Elephant Man, and like Treves is sort of a spin-off of that, they're still buying into the IP. And the same with Doc Unknown and Boss Snake. Does that sound about right? Or
I think that's kind of comic fans in general are kind of into that kind of thing, aren't you? Like you don't like buy into like a character so much, or like a writer or an artist. It's like I personally like kind of buy into the world.
Yeah.
That's why Marvel always had, you know, the crossovers and, you know, team books and stuff like that, because people want to see stuff interact, and you know, maybe someone's happening over here and you think that's cool, but you're kind of thinking on what's happening on, you know, the other coast of America or something, and you know, there's always opportunity to kind of expand like that.
It does make me wonder if it'd be a cool idea to do three related titles in the same universe, but you know, separate titles. But I don't know.
I think that could be quite cool, but it's obviously tougher.
Yeah.
So it's all a gamble, isn't it?
I don't know. We're not going to do it till next March anyway, so we've still got time to think it all through. That's a question I need to ask you. How long does it take you to go from your script to getting like the finished for issue one?
It's going to depend on your artist, isn't it?
All right, yeah.
Like, you know, really, you're probably looking at like one page, depends. Like, Luke does a lot of research as well, you know, to kind of make sure it kind of looks authentic and, you know, stuff's not found out of time periods and things like that. So that's going to take time. And then he'll do, you know, thumbnails where it'll kind of, you know, show you where stuff roughly is going to be. And then the pencils itself are going to be like a full day, maybe a bit longer. Then inks are probably maybe, you know, half a day. And then colors, half a day. So each page could potentially take, you know, 4-5 days a page at 22 pages. It's quite a long time.
Yeah. Okay, maybe we should push it back. I don't know.
Are you going to finish a book and then do it, or just get like preview pages together?
Wow, I don't know, because we were going to do like 5 pages and then like cover art and stuff like that. But after speaking to you today, maybe that would change. I'm not too sure. I need to speak to them and see what they say. But because it sounds like a really good model with you being able to have something to give out to reviewers and as like a preview issue.
Yeah, I think the first Merrick Kickstarter, we got a lot more attention on like news sites and stuff as well. I think because we did have the issue to kind of give to people, and you know, people could review it or talk about it and whatnot. This time with the Treves Kickstarter, there's been less interest from news sites and stuff, because, you know, there's not really much else to go on.
Yeah.
So it, a lot of it is kind of, you know, it's been on the back of the success of the first series that, you know, where we are now with the new Kickstarter.
Yeah. Also, one last question. Sorry, man.
Sorry.
I did have a theory that, so how are you, have you got any of your comic books in any sort of independent comic stores at all?
No, that just, it's just a nightmare, that one
as
well.
It's a nightmare, okay.
Like, I've been to like local stores and they just, they don't really want to know, pretty much. We're getting, we did like a limited edition print run of 500. I'm nearly sold out, so I'm not too fussed about it.
Yeah.
I'm hoping by the end of this year they'll kind of be moved and gone. I am in the process of getting ISBN numbers set up for the trade paperback and for the new book, because they both do have spines. So then I'm going to try that again and see whether that makes it a bit easier.
Yeah. Just because I thought it might be worth having a trade level on Kickstarter where if someone, there's like a certain tier where it works out that a chain of indie stores might be able to get it for a little bit cheaper. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I've done that on the new one. It, like 10 copies of the trade and 10 copies of the new book.
Yeah.
And it works out, you know, maybe half cover price. Because obviously that's kind of what comics kind of go for into the comic book stores.
Yeah.
But zero interest so far.
Okay.
the hook's still out there waiting though.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's cool. I mean, it's all like an experiment in many ways, because I mean, it's all, although Kickstarter and the indie comic scene seems to be like pretty established, I guess, now with this whole thing, but there's still loads of ground still to be covered, I think.
Yeah, I think I'm still learning when I'm doing it. Like, I'll change things for the next thing that I do as well. And you know, Kickstarter comics, I think it ranked in like the top five comic publishers technically last year, because there's so much stuff coming out from it. And I think there's going to be more, like, you know, established pros coming onto Kickstarter. You're seeing it already, and their totals are just, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah, oh yeah, ridiculous amounts. There's that one one at the minute that's asked for 15,000, and it's, which seems like a lot to me anyway, but then they've got 110,000 or something.
Which one's that?
What was it?
Is it the guy from God Hates Astronauts? Is it that one?
I don't know, actually. Completely blanked. Let's have a quick look.
Steve Lichtman, yeah, volume that, one.
That's the one.
$106,000, 590% funded.
23 days to go.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
It's a ridiculous amount of money.
They asked for 18,000, which
is a lot of money.
Yeah, like seriously, a lot of money. But I don't know, if they can get it, then why not? I guess.
I think the money issue kind of affects you where you are in the world as well. With so many comic fans in America,
right?
You know, and our currency being stronger at the minute, it means, you know, they're used to buying like a book for $3-4 or whatever at the comic book store. If you're selling your book for £3 or £4, it's instantly, you know, closer to $6-8 plus postage. So, you know, you can price yourself,
of course, yeah,
from that whole market really easily. But on you know, on the other hand, if you pay an artist in America, like, your money's worth more than an American artist paying. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, so if they're paying $50, that's like, you know, $50, but $50 to us is like, you know, £30. So you kind of get an advantage that way, but a disadvantage when it comes to selling it to other countries.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Which is also worth thinking about, because international postage is horrific as well.
How much would it cost you to ship, I don't know, a graphic novel over to somewhere in the US?
To send one issue of Merrick to America was coming in at like $4.95, I think. To ship all four, I think, came in at like just under a tenner. I think one week I spent £600 in the post office.
Oh, Christ.
Yeah. That was a painful week.
Yeah. So also, do you think any... It seems like I've always been a big fan of Image Comics, like the story behind how it became Image Comics, where it's like separate companies essentially coming together under one brand. Do you think that will happen with indie comics at all?
I think there's lots of people already trying to do it and starting their own imprints and stuff. But I'm kind of just happy. I don't know. It doesn't, like, designing a logo and a company name and a website, it just seems like hard work when I can just go, hi, I'm Tom Ward, I made this comic, and just concentrate on making the comic itself. You're almost kind of promoting two things. Do you know what I mean? If you do your own imprint, it's like, hey, I'm this guy, I've got this imprint, we make this comic. It's just like an extra thing in the chain to go wrong, when you could just be like, hey, I made this comic.
Yeah. So it's more direct in that way. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a, I understand it from like a, you know, like a quality control perspective. It's like, oh, you know, this comic company makes sweet comics, but I don't know whether if you're doing it independently, you need to do that.
Yeah.
If you just got like kind of, you know, you've got a history of putting out good stuff, I think that would carry you enough. Like your own name.
I suppose your name becomes a brand then, doesn't it?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. Cool. All right, man. Well, sorry to keep you.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I tend to get a few like questions as I go. But seriously, thanks for taking the time to do it. It's really interesting, really exciting. And you're one of the people I'm personally looking to like try and recreate some of your success, because I don't know, like creatively, financially, you just seem to be doing it right in my eyes anyway. So
Books on the table. It's like, I think, you know, it's the best way to look at it. Like it's got so much respect for anyone who like gets a comic through to print. It's like, you know, when you go to like conventions and there's loads of people and it's like, wow, you took nothing and made it into something. It's just super cool. Then when you get more than one book, you're like, shit, I've got more books. And it's pretty mad stuff, really.
Yeah. Cool, man. So how can people keep up with you, or where can I send people to?
Yeah, if you you can see our Facebook page for the comic, which is facebook.com/TheElephantManComic. We've also got a website where you can download the first issue for free, which is www.merrickcomic.co.uk, and you can buy some physical comics and t-shirts and some other stuff there. Obviously, we've got the new Kickstarter going. If you just search Treves Kickstarter, I think that'll come up the first link.
And that's spelled T-R-E-V-E-S, Treves.
Yeah, cool. That's right. And my Twitter is @highbrowtrash, because I quite like lowbrow stuff and highbrow stuff, and I think it's funny. And @MerrickComic is kind of the comic's own Twitter account that I tweet promo stuff from. I'm not just jamming everyone up.
Cool.
That's about it.
Yeah, nice one.
Yeah, if you've got any other questions, just feel free to drop us an email or tweet me, and I'll try and help you out.
Lots of stuff to ponder on. I got to feed this juicy info back to the branch, back to the boys. I just checked out the Grime comic book series, and it does look really cool. We're all gonna submit something to it. So if you do want to get involved in indie comics, seems like a great way to start. In the meantime, tweet me, email me, Google me, Luke of Condor, and I'll see you soon. All right, bye. Like a stinky old cheese, babe.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned, We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.